Full Service Radio is supported by Compass, the future of real estate in the Metro DC area and beyond. Discover more at compass.com.
Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
Tuned in to Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service Radio.
You're listening to The Tidbit, brought to you by Curate. Live at the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, I'm your host and the CEO of Curate, Kim Bryden. Do you run a small business or have dreams to start one? Well, here at The Tidbit, we've got your back. Each week, we talk through tidbits of knowledge around starting or running a small business with a food and beverage lens. This show is based on a biweekly newsletter we send out at Curate called The Tidbit. So if you're eager to learn more tidbits of knowledge around the food and beverage industry, starting or growing a business, or even entrepreneurship lessons learned, sign up today. Head over to curateconnect.com and sign up in the footer. That's CURATE connect.com. If you're just tuning into The Tidbit, I have a confession to make. I am a huge advocate for and have built my business on creating ecosystems for local small business to survive and thrive. So when I read the headline posted on the New York Times, "How Craft Breweries Are Helping to Revive Local Economies," I thought, of course, and thank you, Global News Outlet, for continuing to recognize the importance of small business in job creation, tourism, and more, specifically through the lens of food and beverage. And the article goes on to read, "Across the country, in once bustling manufacturing centers, breweries are now giving new fizz to sleepy commercial districts. If alcohol-based businesses were blamed for the breakdown of society in the Prohibition era and beyond, breweries are now being seen as a force for good. The economic ripple effects are definitely there," said David Barnett, a Chicago-based senior research analyst for JLL, a commercial brokerage firm. "Breweries create a cool tourism aspect for out-of-towners, and it's been good for residents as well. And although they're small, those breweries pack an economic jolt. In 2016, they contributed about $68 billion to the national economy," the Brewers Association said. So how did this movement even come to be? Well, I think a large part of this momentum can actually be attributed to Sam Adams, which was founded back in 1984. A Fast Company article written about Sam Adams states, "Throughout the 1970s, there were fewer than 100 breweries in the entire country, and the market was controlled by Coors, Budweiser, and Miller. But as Jim Cook, the founder of Sam Adams, went from bar to bar selling his small batch of beer, he discovered that there was a budding interest in craft brews." And you can hear more about Jim Cook and his story actually over on the podcast, How I Built This, which I encourage you to check out. But I wanted to sort of dive into this deeper. Since 1984, how does Sam Adams continue to stay relevant in this growing, more than now 5,000 independently operated craft brewery revival? So to get into this a little bit deeper, today we have the absolute pleasure of sitting down with Samuel Adams' master brewer, Jennifer Glanville. See, over the last three episodes, we discussed the importance of getting involved and learning more about your local food shed, understanding how to pitch an investor as a purpose-driven business, and why it's so crucial for you to continue to tap into your creative brain by slowing down as an entrepreneur. So we're going to talk a bit about all of these topics with Jennifer and more right after we take a quick break.
Full Service Radio is supported by Compass. Discover Compass, America's first modern real estate company. By pairing the industry's top agents with technology, Compass delivers an incomparable client experience from the first-time buyer to the seasoned seller. Visit them today in DC, Maryland, and Virginia, or navigate compass.com day or night.
Hi, Jennifer. Thank you so much for chatting with us here on The Tidbit.
Hi, Kim. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
This is awesome. Well, to just get right into it, on our last episode, we actually discussed the creative process and how as entrepreneurs, it's really important for us to take time and space to allow our creative minds to experiment. It's not always just about being in the hustle and grind of productivity, outputs, and that sort of constant demand of business. And I've been reading this amazing piece about you in Fast Company that I briefly mentioned at the top of the show, and it's titled Sam Adams' Secret Weapon for Winning Back the American Craft Drinker. Wow, that's pretty cool.
No pressure.
And it reads, Glanville, who has been working at Sam Adams for over 15 years, has played a key role in helping the brand keep up with the changing tastes of the American beer drinker. She's launched the Nano Brewery, which serves as a lab for all kinds of cool experiments. So tell us more about this. I mean, as Sam Adams has grown and the business obviously demands consistency, how do you stay relevant? I mean, how do you sort of spark imagination and creativity into your process?
Yeah, well, it's really interesting that Jim Cook, who is our brewer and founder, you know, started this small business at the time. And, you know, over 30 years have gone by and he's just as passionate as he was then. Mm-hmm. Today. And that has been instilled from the moment I started working. And, you know, he really encourages us to never just sit with status quo. I, you know, heard you talking about, you know, it's so hard when you're a small business and an entrepreneur not to get caught up in always meeting the demand, but you also have to let your creative juices flow too. And, you know, I certainly struggle with that because we do have demands for beer that needs to get out the door.
Totally.
But at the end of the day, we're not going to have new beers if we don't let our creative juices flow there in the Nano Brewery. So I created the Nano Brewery about 10 years ago, which is essentially just a very small brewing system. Anybody could buy one. It's really a homebrew system. It's 10 gallons. And what this allows us is to constantly be experimenting with different ingredients, different recipes, and, you know, making sure that we have things in our sort of arsenal, as I like to call them, and we're ready for, you know, the next beer that we want to make and to try to keep ahead of the game. Because, you know, drinkers today, awesome part about being a brewer today is that, you know, I've been doing this for now almost 17 years, is that the craft drinker loves to try new beers, mm-hmm. loves to try new ingredients. You know, it's the same thing in food, and I definitely see the two over the past decade, you know, coming hand in hand. And we want to be able to bring the drinkers really unique ingredients or a fun part of the process that might create different flavors, because it's all about flavors. I mean, people who are into food and drink really are demanding a lot of flavors, constant variety, and of course, you mentioned consistency.
Totally. And quoting that Fast Company piece again, it says that you, Glanville's love of Wellfleet oysters inspired you to test out brewing with the whole mollusk, shell and all, and that experiment yielded to a stout that sold at Boston's famous Union Oyster House and has become a staple at local festivals. And I wanted to bring this up because we also discussed the importance of getting involved and learning more about your food shed on this show. So I feel like that is such an integral part of, so it seems, your creative process as well. How does interacting with your food shed help to inspire your brews?
Yeah, it's been very fortunate for me that over the years I have been able to, and it's a huge part of our culture, our creative culture, is meeting the people that are growing or farming or creating the ingredients that you're using.
Mm-hmm.
You want to meet with them because I always want to know, what is your take on this? I mean, I'm not an expert in berries or oysters or anything like that, so I want to meet the growers of those and really learn from them. And, you know, you learn so much. I've ended up with so many different ingredients that wasn't my original intention just from talking to farmers about it. So that could be from hops. We have strong relationships with all of our hop growers, both overseas in the UK and in Germany, as well as in the U.S. And in terms of the Wellfleet oyster, I actually grew up on Cape Cod. My mom's from there, and we spent a lot of summers there. And I love Wellfleet oysters, completely biased. I love all oysters, but Wellfleet are my favorite. And I just became fascinated by the farming of Wellfleet oysters and how they're grown and sustained. And it's such a livelihood in Wellfleet. Many families rely on these. So I have a really small cottage there, so I was determined to learn more. And as I learned more, simultaneously, I read a book about using some oysters in the beer in the old wives' tale in the UK was that it would take a dry stout and make it smoother and sweeter. And I love the idea of bringing history back into beer since it's such a historical beverage. So it really was perfect timing all around. So experimented with that beer. We put the entire oyster in unwashed, all the briny and salty and some seaweed and everything in there.
Wow.
And we brewed a beer that was designed to be very dry, and it came out, you know, very sweet and smooth. So, you know, either we all drank the Kool-Aid and we're believing it, or it actually is a true urban legend. But it's been a fun part of the process too. Again, to your point, getting to know the local people or in general, the people who are providing you with these ingredients.
Yeah. And that local along the entire supply chain. I mean, you were saying your love for the oyster and that oyster farmer, right? Now you're creating that consistency in demand for them as well. And what does that do for the entire ripple effect of that local economy? It's amazing.
It is amazing. And we've even furthered our relationships. There's a festival that they have down there that is a large festival in general. People are very happy to come down in the fall and eat a lot of oysters. But we've actually expanded that to do some educational pieces around it and we do an education tasting around it, and we'll partner up with a oyster farmer. So to your point, it's helping bring more knowledge in general around to the community.
Yeah, I'm a strong believer you can't decouple access to knowledge from access to opportunity. And so by bridging those together, I mean, you're providing this public space for people to learn more about the entire ecosystem. Awesome. And I want to also bring up that I also mentioned you worked at Sam Adams now for over 15 years. And so as a millennial, many of my peers and colleagues, 15 years is quite a long time. And so I would love to hear from you what employee retention and culture is like at Sam Adams, because a lot of entrepreneurs today have a really hard time hiring and have an even harder time motivating employees to buy into the quality and consistent output that their business demands. So what operational lessons have you learned as you've worked your way up through the company? And do you have any tips for the small business owners as they're beginning to build their teams?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly is a struggle, I think, in terms of just today, how easy it is to find out about other opportunities. So, you know, retention can be a challenge. And also, you know, talking to a lot of entrepreneurs and small business owners, you know, it's very easy that you believe in your culture and you believe in yourself, but to be able to translate that to your employees so that they see that, it certainly can be a challenge. You know, I think from my point of view, again, in a long time, when people say that now it's almost been 17 years, it's hard to believe. And I think that, wow, I was like just like a kid when I started, basically. And learning everything that I've learned over the years really, again, you know, goes back to Jim Cook, our fearless leader, brewer and founder of Samuel Adams, because his passion, I have never seen it waver in all the times. And it was abundantly clear from the get-go that, you know, this company was treated like a small business, and we all work hard. We're all in it. And I think that's one thing that's really important. It doesn't matter in our company at Samuel Adams. It doesn't matter if you're in finance or operations or marketing or brewing, because we all want to do what's best for the beer.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a mindset that you have to make sure your employees can get around. We certainly have had people who didn't fit in our culture. And I think, you know, that's okay to recognize that our hiring process takes a long time, because we really want to make sure not only is the job a good fit, are you a good fit for us, but are we a good fit for you?
Mm-hmm.
And it's really making sure that they believe in it. You know, and I can honestly say that it's gone by in a flash. It's hard to believe so much time has gone by, but I am just as passionate, you know, getting up this morning, going to work, as I was, you know, 17 years ago when I started. And I don't know a lot of people who can say that, and it's definitely the culture around it and that passion and just feeling like you're actually part of something. And I think that's where it can get lost in this busy world, making sure your employees, you know, it's not just a thank you, but making sure they can see and understand how they're impacting you and your business.
Absolutely. And I love that you said it's about instilling that mindset as well. It's hard to sometimes quantify what culture means, but it's everything. And having people recognize how, like you just said, their impact every day on the job affects the growth of the business. That's really important.
I was just thinking, you know, I have people who say like, oh, do you have a pool table? Or do you know, culture can mean many different things. And I look at it in terms of culture. To me, the work culture should be good, that you want to go to work every day, that you're passionate about what you do, whether it's your own company or you work for somebody else. That's what culture brings to it. And there's many things that can bring that culture. Certainly maybe a game room or something for some people really works. But, you know, at the end of the day, I always look at it where I really, really, really can say that I love grabbing a pint of beer with my coworkers at the end of the day. And that's what makes it all worthwhile, you know. And I you know, joke around, but I mean, we voluntarily go on vacation with coworkers, right? Because we actually like the people we work with. And I think that can lend itself to the culture. Everybody works hard. Everybody's passionate. And just making sure you're hiring not the same skill set of people, but the same, again, we use this word a couple times already, but like-minded people.
Yeah, definitely. Well, before we jump into some more of the nitty-gritty of starting and running a food and beverage small business, we are going to take a quick break. We're sitting down with Master Brewer Jennifer Glanville of Samuel Adams. We'll be right back. We're back on the Tidbit. We are sitting down with Jennifer Glanville, the master brewer of Samuel Adams. Hello, Jennifer.
Hi.
So I am thrilled to talk with you today for many, many reasons, but in part because we are hosting today the Sam Adams Brewing the American Dream Speed Coaching Event and Pitch Competition for the Baltimore Metro Area Entrepreneurs DC2. And just so you listeners know, since 2008, Sam Adams Brewing the American Dream has supported Axion in providing nearly 1,600 loans totaling $23.5 million to food and beverage businesses across the country that are creating or retaining approximately 5,900 jobs. And so I just think it's absolutely phenomenal that Sam Adams is committed to awarding an entrepreneur $10,000 plus a year of mentorship and resources today. So I applaud you, and the small business community thanks you, because this is just absolutely wonderful. So I'm wondering, Jennifer, when you're listening to the pitches this afternoon, what do you want to hear? What are you listening in for?
Yeah, first of all, I just want to say that it's hard for me to ever deny that I have one of the best jobs, because I get to make beer for a living.
Yeah.
But I will say, to compliment that, I am so thrilled that I am involved in our Brewing American Dream program. It is a pleasure every day to meet just like-minded, passionate, excited, creative entrepreneurs. So today, you know, being in Baltimore today and experiencing the pitch room and the speed coaching, really, I mean, it's just a highlight. I mean, I learned so much from these people, meet such great people. So thank you to all the small business owners who are going to be coming out tonight.
Yeah. How cool is it to just see different trends emerging? You know, as you go across the country, I'm sure there's differences in what types of goods are even being produced in each sub-region. I think that's pretty cool.
It is amazing. I focus a lot on brewing, but I am thrilled when I see, I had a woman in Atlanta who had spent time making all of her cakes. She had a bakery with Samuel Adams beers. So bringing them and the passion, and she said, I understand that, you know, craft beer is growing so much, and I want to include it in my pastries. And I just thought, you know, this is awesome. And so to be able to meet these people who are just constantly thinking about their business and elevating it and taking to the next level is really inspiring.
Yeah. And so back to my question, we had talked on the here on the Tidbit in one of our previous episodes, how do you pitch an investor as a purpose-driven business? So I'm wondering, what do you listen for when we're at the pitch competition?
Yeah, it's really a tough pitch. I mean, you have 2 minutes, and for anybody who thinks that seems like a long time, practice pitching anything for 2 minutes, and it's, totally. It's not nearly enough time often to get your, you know, everything you want to get across. So, you know, the two top things I always give people is practice, practice, practice. You know, making sure that you can hit all of your key, you know, messages in the 2 minutes, and then practice will also really instill confidence. You know, there's nothing I like seeing better than just a really confident person, because when you talk to people, and I, you know, we can see this anywhere. If you talk to a small food entrepreneur at a farmer's market, they're very confident in their, what they're talking to you about their product. On the pitch room, it could be completely different if they just, you know, can lose that confidence. And it is nerve wracking, but making sure they practice and they're confident. And then really important to me, which a lot of people forget, and it's probably a lot of nerves, but, you know, what is your story? Tell me why you're doing this, because I personally find that inspiring. And when I'm looking at local products, I like to know the background. You know, why did you start this business? Is it your great-great-grandmother's recipe, or, you know, your ancestors or something? You know, really let me know why and what your passion is. And I find that also helps the person pitching get very comfortable with their story. And then, you know, you can see that confidence really build up. So those are some important things, you know, passion and confidence. And then, you know, what are you going to do with the money? Where do you see your brand, your business going, or your brand going? You don't have to have the full picture, but, you know, is there, what's your next step? You know, where do you see yourself? And I think, you know, you mentioned this earlier, you don't want to get too big, you know, too fast in your mind, but,
right.
You know, definitely I'm interested, as someone who's awarding $10,000. What is this money going to get you? What are you going to use it for? How are you going to grow, expand, or complete your business with that money?
Absolutely. Through School of Food, a program I run in partnership with Humanum, a social enterprise in East Baltimore, where we'll be having our event this evening, one of the courses is on crafting the perfect pitch. And at the end of the workshop, we actually do an improv pitch session where whomever is interested is assigned a completely random slideshare presentation, and the slides change every 10 seconds and you have to improv pitch what's ever on screen.
Wow.
And my whole point of doing that is to say exactly your first point. It's really about you just being confident. I mean, public speaking is a massive fear for a lot of people. And so you as the business owner know your business better than anyone else. It's really just getting over those nerves and being able to pitch confidently. So yeah, I'm a big fan of that number one point too. And to your second point of why are you doing this? I mean, food is storytelling. And you even mentioned, with talking about your creative process and the ingredients, understanding that historical context of the oysters and the old wives' tale from the UK. I mean, all of that is so fundamentally important, not just in developing the product, but then establishing that brand loyalty with your customers, because people care. People care about that story and that origin story of the bigger brand and then all of the products that you produce.
Exactly. And there are very few products out there that you're the only one. So you want to stand out from your competitors in that way. And people feel a connection. I mean, everybody in this crazy world today, we're so busy, that connection is nice. Oh, I met so-and-so. Look at her products now in whatever store. Product, I'm gonna purchase that because I remember meeting them at something. And I certainly know I hear that from folks all the time, who's like, I remember the first time I met Jim Cook, or the first time I met you, I've been drinking Sam Adams ever since. And it can be that connection point that can really create a loyal following.
Absolutely. And after the pitch competition, we'll go straight into the speed coaching event. So do you have any teasers for us? What are three sort of best practices you often tell entrepreneurs when they're starting out? Maybe it's a tactic to save them time, save them money, anything like that?
Yeah, first I would say I would encourage anyone to come out to any of these speed coaching events. They're really priceless. I mean, advice is, you know, Jim Cook founded the company, you know, over 30 years ago, and there were two things he couldn't get access to, despite he had 3 degrees from Harvard and was a very successful business consultant, but he couldn't get access to money. because a bank didn't want to lend them money to start a brewery, you know, and as you're aware, food and beverage businesses are deemed to be still risky businesses. So, you know, the interest rates can be high if you can even get a loan. And then separately, advice. There were not a lot of breweries at the time where Jim could say, hey, how did you start your brewery? So seek out advice. Entrepreneurs love to help other entrepreneurs. So, you know, seek out people who are doing it successfully that, and besides your family. I mean, I can bring any beer home to my family. They're going to give me an honest opinion, but they also, you know, pretty loyal to me. So,
exactly.
You know, make sure people who are tasting or giving you advice are beyond your family as well. Utilize customers. You know, we do that a lot. We're, you know, what do you think of this? Give me some feedback. People do like to participate in that. So always, seek out advice and make sure that you don't have to act on all of it, but take it all in and see what might work. And I think the other thing is for entrepreneurs, it's very hard and scary to make the first step. And there are things like our speed coaching event where you may come with just an idea. You don't have to have a business, a small business. You don't have to have even a business plan. We have many people who show up to our speed coaching events who just have an idea of something that they want to do. And as a result of our speed coaching event, they get some good advice. They actually network and meet a lot of people. And I've loved over the years, I mean, I've been part of this since the beginning. So for 10 years now, I've seen businesses grow from someone who came the first time with just an idea, and now they are opening a brick and mortar store. And that, I mean, that's the goal, right? That's what we want to see, is people expanding and growing their businesses from their first passionate idea.
That's fantastic. And I love that point you made about it's not just access to capital, but it's financial capital, but it's also access to social capital. And, you know, you may not be born into a network of individuals who are already connected in the food and beverage industry. And I think as entrepreneurs, whether, again, you as a listener have a business or want to start one, understanding that importance of building your social networks with people you may not even know, and just sitting down with them and hearing the lessons they have to learn. I mean, it's crucial. Building that bank of social capital is fundamental to growing your business. Absolutely.
It certainly is. And I, you know, you mentioned our pitch room. So the prize is $10,000, which is an awesome, awesome prize. But really what I hear from the folks that win this is that more valuable than that $10,000 is a year's worth of coaching and mentoring from Samuel Adams. And we give them access to anyone in the company. So it could be, you know, someone in marketing, someone in operations, someone in legal, someone in human resources, someone in brewing. And personally, I know for me, we don't end after a year. And even when I meet people at the speed coaching, I'm happy to answer questions. And many people in our organization are too, because we want to see these people succeed. So we're available and always want to answer questions and help where we can.
Amazing. I love you guys. So how can people stay involved and learn more about this? Where can they find you online?
Sure. We have brewingtheamericandream.com website. So you can go on the website. You can find out where we have some upcoming, we have our event this evening in Baltimore, but we have some upcoming ones around the country. There's also resources on there for videos that will help you, you know, sort of create the perfect pitch. There's also some small businesses that have been recipients of loans from Axion. You know, our micro partner, lending partner, Axion USA, is one of the largest providers of micro loans to food and beverage entrepreneurs. And what's great about them is that they really work with the clients to make sure that they're not taking too large a loan or too small a loan. To really make sure that they're doing, you know, getting the right amount of money for what they need it for. The repayment rate is almost 98% through our program, and that's almost really unheard of in small business loans.
Wow. Yeah, absolutely. And in terms of social media, do you have handles that they can follow along? Instagram, Twitter, Facebook?
Yeah, we have, if you follow Samuel Adams, we post frequently about Brewing the American Dream. We call it BTAD, B-T-A-D, so you'll see that a lot. Hashtag BTAD or hashtag Brewing the American Dream. You'll see some pictures from tonight's event. And I really can't encourage people enough to, you know, small business owners are very busy running their businesses, but to take time out for events like this can really be literally life-changing business moves, you know, that you can learn from tonight and really see how you may be able to expand or elevate or make your business more efficient. I mean, there's just so many. There's really no downside.
Well, thank you so much, Jennifer, for sitting down with us today at the Tidbit, and I can't wait to see you later this evening. Until next time, everyone, remember to scale thoughtfully and source locally.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter @FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook @FullServiceRadio. Thanks for listening. All right, that live show just finished here on Full Service Radio at the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Stick with us. We'll be right back with some more live programming soon.